Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Take the Word for It. I'm Pat Lynn. I'm here, as always, with my good friend Isaac Johnson. And we are here at the show that loves to take real-world issues and bring some biblical perspective for them and help you just navigate as you are here on the mission for Jesus and trying to figure out, man, what do I do with life? And so, Isaac, my good friend, how are you this morning?
Doing well. Just a little bit of a head cold, but other than that, I'm ready to roll. So
that's great. Well, we have spent, and man, we're so lucky to have, I guess I'm so lucky to have you, you know, on the show and be able to do this with you. And man, I look forward to our conversations every week and what I learn from you. As you spent, you know, your career as a marriage and family therapist or counselor and now are in pastoral ministries. But Isaac, I just feel like I pick up some every week, and we spent this entire season talking about marriage. And boy, if you are, you know, tuning in today for the first time, we just will welcome you and say this, you know, if you're married or looking to be married at any point in time, and saw this, man, go back. We've spent the last, I think, Isaac, is it nine episodes?
I believe so. Nine or ten, yeah.
Yeah, nine or ten episodes just talking about marriage. We're looking forward to the week of October 21st, doing a marriage retreat here in Squim. And man, you know, I don't know about you, but I feel like I'm in a season, Isaac, where marriage is just getting attacked. And my wife and I were just talking about this, but it just seemed to be, and maybe it's just, I don't know, something about you and your friends, you know, my friend group being in our 30s and 40s, that I seem to be seeing a lot of divorce, you know, and people just struggling in their marriages. And so certainly we want to help with that. And that's the point of the marriage retreat. And that's the point of this season on the show. And so today, you know, I think we're talking about kind of an interesting topic, and usually, Isaac, you pick the topics for this season, and so today we're talking about the boredom epidemic in marriage. Explain to me what that is. What is that?
Well, it kind of catches us off guard. I work with a lot of couples who just express frustration, but when it's at the root of it, they have just become bored with marriage. What they wanted marriage to be is not what it turned out. Their partner is not exciting and fun anymore. And I think even the pandemic really kind of brought that to the surface, where people were like all of a sudden forced to be under the same roof, and they didn't have the distractions of jobs and other things. And they were like, wow, you are boring.
No one actually says that to their spouse. Does somebody actually say to their spouse, I'm sorry, you know, in the middle of it, I'm sorry, you're boring? Have you heard somebody, you know, in counseling tell you that? They said, wow.
And it's actually mostly women who get, men tend to like a rigid routine. They kind of get more stuck in a rut. Remember, women, when they get married, they kind of sign up for what they're designed to be responders. And so they're designed to be part of his adventure. And men are always like, they do a great job of pursuing and making her feel wanted and excited in the dating process. And then women can feel like, hey, where did you go? It's not fun anymore. And you see the themes in romance books that are written by women. And it's a lot of taking her away to some adventure. Yeah, is the main theme there.
Well, I think that's interesting, because I know I've heard you say before that, what was the book that talked about this? Wild at Heart. Wild at Heart,
yes.
Talked about this, about John Eldridge, about how, you know, and I don't remember if this was you or John that brought this up, but I remember you pointed out to me that she wants to be involved in your adventure and be part of it, but not your adventure, right?
Yes.
And so maybe that has something to do with it. Like, you know, guys, you know, do the wooing like you're talking about, and everything gets nice and exciting, and you get married, and you go through all that fun stuff, you know, at the beginning of your marriage. And then possibility, maybe he just got bored, and she's like, hey, we're in this forever. And God designed marriage as a forever deal. And so I could think part of maturity in marriage would certainly be learning how to continue the adventure after that initial, part of it is over. And so would you say that, boredom is something that every marriage goes through?
Oh, yeah. It's unavoidable because boredom's a perception. So what one person finds exciting, the other person may not. So every marriage is going to face it. It's just, what do you do about it? That's going to determine whether it becomes a problem or it's just a speed bump.
This is so interesting. This is such an interesting thing to me because I think our culture, you hear so many times, our marriage ran its course. And I think we just, we're done with each other and it's great and we're moving on here and the other. And so people get divorced and they decide to move on because, they were done. That adventure was over. But the Bible is the opposite of that. And the picture of marriage between Christ and the church, is a forever thing. It's a covenant, not a contract like we talk about, meaning that it's something that you are signed up forever. And so, I would think the better that you could learn to make things fun and adventurous and look, and wake up and say, hey, how do I make today cool? Or how do I make today, how do I add some spice today? Any of those kind of things. That's just going to be better for your marriage, man. But I couldn't imagine going back to the beginning, telling my wife, you're boring. I'd be in trouble if I said that to my wife. Love you, Jennifer. I would be in trouble. All right. So the Bible on boredom, there's some things in here, a few verses for today just to look at. So I'll start in Ecclesiastes 2, 24 through 26. It says, a person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This, too, I see, is from the hand of God, for without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? To the person who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. This is written by Ecclesiastes, is written by Solomon. What do you think he's saying here? What's the context of this verse?
Well, here's a guy who had 700 wives, so maybe he is an expert on marriage or on what not to do. But he's talking about everything that we do, we should find enjoyment in. And so we're supposed to find enjoyment in our job, enjoyment in everyday tasks. And it correlates to marriage, too. Marriage, God designed marriage to be anything but boring, but we make it boring by the choices we make or the perceptions that we choose to buy into.
Wow. Proverbs 13:4 says this. It says, a sluggard's or a lazy person's appetite is never filled, but the desires of the diligent are fully satisfied. I think there again is probably an example of someone who's working, being diligent in their marriage. They're going to find satisfaction. That's a great idea. Man, it's easy to become lazy in your marriage. I think once that exciting, beginning season is over, it's probably. I know there's certainly been seasons when I have put less effort in terms of making things exciting than I did at the beginning. And so, one more, 1 Timothy 6, 2 through 6. This is actually in the context of money. The relevant part was kind of towards the end, but I'm going to read the whole thing because when I read it in its context, it just stuck out to me. And so in the context of money, but taking the same principles and moving them towards marriage, it says this. It says, those who have believing masters should not show them disrespect just because they are fellow believers. Instead, they should serve them even better because their masters are dear to them as fellow believers and are devoted to the welfare of their slaves. These are the things you are to teach and insist on. Here we go. If anyone teaches otherwise and does not agree to sound instruction of our Lord Jesus Christ and to godly teaching, they are conceited and understand nothing. So if you won't listen to what the scripture says, you're placing your own knowledge above the scriptures, is what he's saying, and you're not in a place of understanding. It says then this, they have an unhealthy interest in controversies and quarrels about words that result in envy, strife, malicious talk, evil suspicions, and constant friction between people of corrupt mind who have been robbed of the truth and who think that godliness is a means for financial gain. But godliness with contentment is godliness with contentment, in other words, being content in godliness, is a great gain. So not chasing after things that look better and bigger and wealthier, which I think we get stuck in this spot in marriage. You might say, hey, grass is greener on the other side of the fence, or I'd like to trade this one in for something different or a newer model. And basically what it's saying is, hey, there's a great gain to being satisfied in what I've given you and being content in that, and that will bring you joy. And so that was a lot. But if you take that and you put it in the context of marriage, it's like one of the things I was thinking about today, my Monday morning routine this Monday was going to the dump. And so I'm going, it's like 40-minute drive to the dump where I live and 40 minutes back. And everybody hates doing that. But on the way there, I was thinking, man, you know, I love Jennifer more than I did when I married her at this point in time. And mm-hmm. I just think about the things that we have learned to do together. And it's such a different place than it was when we were just having the lovey-dovey eyes because we were super excited about getting hitched, you know? And so I'm thankful to God for that. And I'm thankful for her as my partner and in my marriage. But there are probably, I mean, some examples of just times when you've been bored. Now, be nice, but has there been a time in your marriage, Isaac, when you personally have been bored? Like, has that happened?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my wife and I were talking about it yesterday, where when we first got married, we did a lot of adventures together, traveling places, and just because we didn't have kids, we didn't have a lot of money, but we just made it a priority to go on little trips and outings together. And then now we've looked at it lately, and life just gets busy and stuff, and we're like, we haven't done that in a while. And I just said, yeah, I'm bored. And I'm not necessarily bored with her as a person per se, but bored of the process and want some excitement. It was easier to generate that at the beginning. It takes more work now. And she mentioned several situations too over the years where it's like, yeah, you get in these seasons where you're just kind of bored, and there's no other way to say it.
You know, and I think there's something that's probably true for men. And certainly, you know, I think my season is different than yours. I have little kids. My kids are, you know, 5 and under. We have 3 kids that are 5 and under. And so we are like going with, you know, chickens with their heads cut off, like all the time. It was, you know, yesterday we cleaned up the living room. It took like 2 hours, and then an hour later it's a mess already. And I'm just like, how did we get here? So you're just constantly doing that with little kids, because as soon as you put something away, you know, they take it out. And then at the end of the day, you're tired. My wife works from like 6 a.m. until, you know, 9 every day, because not only does she have a job, but we have little kids. And so she doesn't get a second off. And so then in that season, I feel like we have time periods where we'll just go several months and be like, yeah, we haven't been on a date or done anything fun in forever, you know, and then we're just excited to go get a hamburger and not have kids around us, you know, it's like, oh my gosh. And so, you know, it's a different kind of boredom, you know, being worn out. But here's something that I think is true about men. Like, men either, when they're bored like that, they, and I know it's true for me, I either get depressed, and I'll just put it as an I either get depressed or I get in trouble, right? And so, mm-hmm. like, in those seasons, I'm either getting depressed and down, or if I don't catch myself and I'm not in the Word, my mind will go to places that it shouldn't go. And so, you know, this was one for like, you know, David, King David, man, just going on a wild loop here, but his affair with Bathsheba and what he did, with Bathsheba, was a product of the fact that he should have been doing his job as king, and he wasn't. He was lazily sitting around the castle while everybody else was out fighting battles and leading, and he's like, hey, here's a way I can get myself in trouble. And so that is probably the most untheological explanation if you ever heard of that, but there's just a truth about that, and so protecting your marriage from boredom is important as well. So let me ask you this then, what motivates couples who were once, you know, enamored with each other to become bored in their marriage? Like, how does it move in that direction?
Well, there's a few things. There's one, the biological factor, where when couples get together, they call it the honeymoon stage, and you have hormones that are going on in both of you that are sustaining that excitement and energy, but it only lasts at the most about 2 to 2.5 years, and then it wears off, and it can never be rekindled with the same person to the same level again. So God does that on purpose, because what he wants us then to do is to be in the committed love stage, where we're not just basing it on feelings, so that there is a downturn, an emotional letdown that's natural after those couple of years that couples don't ever see coming. It's like, whoa, where did the feelings go? Well, they were supposed to go dwindle a little bit. Because one, if you just maintained that kind of energy towards one another, you'd never get anything done. You know, like, oh, you right. Hang up. No, you hang up. Oh, no. You know, so it's practical in that sense. And then the other part is all of us, I don't care who you are, had some unrealistic expectations to begin with. You know, we watch fairy tales, get on social media and see what other people's relationships look like. And so we have this idea of what it should be. And then we get disappointed. And we've talked about that before. That sense of disappointment sets in. And then we're like, oh, that sucks. And then we get stuck in that and we get bored. We get lethargic. And then the last thing is, people let boredom happen. Remember, boredom is a perception emotion, meaning it is not like hunger or thirst where you have to fulfill it biologically. It's a perception. And so we get too comfortable. We've relied on those feelings too much, and we get too comfortable. And now we, like we talked about before, where we're making our spouse the adventure instead of creating an adventure with them. And both genders do this, because we'll say things like, well, you're just not like this like you used to be. You know, you're not as fun as you used to be, as if I'm depending on that person for my enjoyment in life. And that's a very dangerous place to be.
Why don't they teach this in high school? Are you serious? I'm listening to you right now. I'm just like, you know, there's certain things they should teach in high school. For instance, budgeting and how to do your taxes and all the things you don't normally take in high school that you probably should take instead of physics. This should be one of them. People should leave high school understanding that there are natural rhythms that happen in life, and that we are designed that way. Oh my goodness. Can you imagine how much better life would be if you had this kind of wisdom as you were, you know, going through it as a 20-year-old? Probably still wouldn't listen because you thought you were invincible, but geez, wow. Okay, so with all of that, you know, in consideration, what is it then, and maybe this is a duh answer because we've already talked about it, but that makes boredom dangerous in marriage?
Well, a couple things. One, we just tend to be more conflictual when we're bored. You know, we see this a lot where couples can see where they're just picking fights with one another because they're really just bored. Because they'll say, well, why were we so agreeable when we were dating? Because things were exciting. That was fun. And so you can create a lot more unnecessary conflict when boredom exists. And if you don't believe me, just watch your kids on a road trip. You know,
oh my gosh.
They will just pick at each other to no end because they're bored. Well, couples are human beings. They're just little kids in adult bodies, and they will do the same thing. You know, and then the other thing that's more dangerous, and this is the part where boredom can really come into play, is it really can cause us to mistakenly believe that the grass is greener somewhere else and potentially with someone else. And with social media, the rise of that starting back in the 2000s, affairs were happening because people would reconnect with their old flame from high school because they were bored in their current relationship. And there was affairs that were taking place, and that was kind of an epidemic. And so boredom, again, it's kind of like it gives us, it's a very strong emotion, and it motivates us to go to places that we probably wouldn't if we weren't bored. And so it can be, that is the number one reason why you need to deal with boredom in marriage.
Wow. All right. So how do people, you know, let's just say I'm bored in my relationship, which is not what I'm saying, sweetheart, if you're listening. This is a for example. But what are some things I could do practically, you know, that are going to help me and my spouse, you know, move out of that stage?
Yeah, there's a few. The first one is realizing it's a perception issue. So John Gottman talks about this, where you need to maintain a 5-to-1 ratio in your marriage, where you're constantly looking at 5 positive things about your spouse to the 1 negative, having 5 positive experiences to the 1 negative. And so that is something that you have to work on. Your spouse is really only as exciting as you decide that they are. And, you know, it could be an example of, you know, maybe my husband isn't the guy that comes home and sweeps me off my feet, but I'm so excited that he comes home and wants to see me. I'm excited that he, you know, works so hard for me. I'm excited. It may not be the most, the things that the world would say are exciting, but it's what you choose to believe is exciting and positive and admirable. And so keeping that 5-to-1 ratio, I do that a lot, because it's the enemy wants to come in and go, oh, look at what they're making you do again. Look at what they're doing. You know, they're the anchor that's dragging you down, you know? So that's important. And then the other one is this is big for couples, is you have to be constantly be willing to redefine love and fun, and especially fun. And fun is a need. We don't think about this, but in Glasser's hierarchy of 5 needs, it's our 5th most important need. So it's not as important as food and things like that, but it is a need. And couples, and it's interesting, they have found, like, when there's a downturn in the economy, divorces tend to go up, because what's the first thing couples stop spending money on is fun. Mm-hmm. And that is a dangerous place to be. So you might have to redefine fun. I liked an exercise one time when we were at a marriage retreat, and they had you could only have $1, and what could you do with fun for $1? Then you could have $5, and then you could have $10, or then they did this where you have 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. And it made you really think about, what are fun things you can do that are inexpensive and not time consuming with kids and careers and things like that. So redefining fun, because what you could do when you first got together may not be realistic now, but that doesn't mean you can't still have a lot of fun.
Sure.
And then just the last couple things is, do things together that neither of you have ever done before. Because what couples tend to do is, like, okay, I'll do what you want to do this week, and you will do what I want to do next week. And you can create actual boredom because, well, I'm just doing it because you want me to, not because I want to. But when you create activities that neither one of you have done before, one, you can't blame each other if it turned out bad, because, hey, neither one of you could have predicted that. And two, even if it turned out bad, it's still an adventure that you didn't experience before. It's something new. It gets you out of that rut. And so that's been a huge thing for my wife and I, is we're constantly looking for, we've never been there before. We've never done that activity before. Let's give it a shot. You know? And then just the romance is huge. Women love romance, but God created romance for men. And because it sticks us to our wife, it keeps us pursuing her. And so just seeing all kinds of little things as being romantic. Romance keeps things interesting. It's that constant song of songs pursuing back and forth to one another. It's not just in the bedroom, but it's in every aspect of your life. And so just really being, if you don't know how to be romantic, Google can tell you how. You don't need to. I've learned more from Google than I have from anybody else, because there's tons of ideas out there from creative people.
Yeah, I'm sure YouTube could probably.
Pinterest.
I've never tried, but you know, I'll bet you come up with some good stuff on YouTube. So I got to go back to this for just a second, Isaac. What is something you can do that's entertaining for a dollar? I'm betting there are other people who are wondering this, and this off the top right here. But you said a buck. So what did people come up with for a buck?
Well, I like what one person said. Is they said you could drive around the block. I thought that was funny. Yeah, these days, maybe not even that. I don't know.
Yeah, not in my truck, but that's awesome.
Somebody said, too, depending on your subscriptions, you could rent a movie. You can find them for a dollar. You could go and share a pop. They always have a lot of times those dollar deals that are still going on today. So you have to think outside the box, but you're right. That is a challenge to do. So
last week I took my daughters on a daddy-daughter date, and we went to Port Angeles, and in Port Angeles down the waterfront, there is an arcade still. And remember arcades when you were a kid?
Mm-hmm.
I grew up going to the arcade, kids at mall, and you know, it was always a ton of money when you were a kid to go. You're just trying to get to play a few games, and so you're, you know, begging your parents for a few bucks to go with. But my girls and I, we went and we got ice cream, and then we ended up at the arcade, and they're like, "Dad, what is this place?" You know, and, "Oh, it's games everywhere. Wow, cool." And we spent a buck. You know, I spent $5. And we probably played for an hour. And I'm like, that was the best use of $5 I've had in a while. So it is still possible in places to do, you know, stuff inexpensively. You just got to get out and look and, you know, be creative like you're talking about. I love that. Man, that is some great stuff for today. Anything else you'd like to throw in there?
Well, one that we don't think about, but I think it's so important, and when I've done marriage retreats in the past, we talked about this, is God has a plan for you as an individual that is not contingent on you being married. But when you get married, and you see this in the Bible, God has a plan for your marriage, and it's supposed to be exciting. And so I just tell couples, really pray together and ask God, if you don't know what that plan is, maybe God wants to take you into ministry together. Maybe God wants you to start a little business. I've had couples do that, like a coffee shop or something together. But it's an adventure that the two of you do that is defined by your relationship. And so if you don't have that with your spouse, I would say that is something you want to pray about, because that transcends your relationship. It's bigger than the two of you, but it includes the two of you. And
and reality about that too, it might take some guts. You might be in a spot where you're like, you know what, if I talk to him about this, is he going to say that, yeah, I think you're boring, or is she going to say that, or, you know, what's their answer going to be? I don't know, but I believe what you said about the fact that God has a plan for your marriage, and here's the truth, fear is a liar, and reality is, you're probably going to ask your spouse, and they're going to be like, oh my gosh, I've been feeling the same way, this is a great idea, let's move together, let's pray together, let's get going together. There's nothing more encouraging than knowing that your partner is still in it, still loves you, and still wants to move forward, and they're excited about change. Change or new things in marriage, man, brings new energy. Anything new that you do, this is why you said, I think one of the great points that you said today was, you know, do an adventure that you pick together that you've never done. That's such a great idea, because it makes the next thing something that you get to experience for the first time together, and then you're just putting money in your bank account for your, you know, for your marriage. You're just stockpiling love there. And so, man, that's great. That is a good word today. Thank you for your wisdom. Geez, I think we'll probably end with that. Thanks for joining us, everybody, today. This has been Take the Word for It with Pat Lynn and Isaac Johnson, and we hope you have a fantastic week, everybody. Be blessed.